Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here, and welcome to a very special episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, episode 4 of our Come From Away series, Welcome to the Rock. Rarely have we had the opportunity to take you on a real deep dive into a show like we will be doing with this series. In this episode, you'll hear from the creative team and cast members from the West End, including Rachel Tucker, playing Captain Beverly Bass.
We are in such a successful, beautifully told show.
Producer John Brandt.
Oh my God, I saw Come From Away yesterday, and there was an immediate outpouring of love and respect for this show.
Director Christopher Ashley.
This cast, Bodies and Mouths, tried to take them to Ireland. Getting it specifically Newfoundland enough was challenging for them.
And many, many more. And if you didn't already know,
Come From Away tells the true story of when 38 planes and thousands of passengers were diverted to this tiny community in Newfoundland on the northeast corner of North America. And people were invited into the locals' homes. They were given everything, fed, housed, and people changed their lives there. They fell in love. They made lifelong friendships. And it's this extraordinary story of kindness set against the backdrop of this terrible tragedy.
You just heard the voice of David Hine, one of the writers of Come From Away. But how do producers take a musical about a story of a small rural community on a Canadian island from Broadway to a European premiere in Dublin and then a West End premiere on its way to Olivier Award glory? Find out in this series of Welcome to the Rock.
Welcome to the Rock!
Come From Away shares the incredible real-life story of the 7,000 airline passengers from all over the world who were grounded in Canada during the wake of 9/11, and the small Newfoundland community that invited these Come From Aways into their lives. As uneasiness turned into trust and music swirled into the night, gratitude grew into friendships, and their stories became a celebration of hope, humanity, and unity. As you heard in episode 1 of this series, Come From Away is a show with humble beginnings. First as a college theater festival workshop production, followed up by productions on America's West Coast, before heading off on an extended pre-Broadway tryout tour. And in the last episode, we discovered from Junkyard Dog Productions that they didn't really know what the show's trajectory was going to be.
We did not have a Broadway plan in place.
Well, I think every show is different. You sort of, part of hopefully your job as a producer, figure out what that path is for each of those shows to give it its best chance.
It did hit Broadway in a big way. And today is one of the most popular shows on the Great White Way. But the producers didn't sit on their laurels. A U.S. tour and a Canadian sit-down were on the cards. But what about a West End transfer? Surely Broadway success meant a show in London.
Well, as you know from our trajectory in New York, we took our time. We felt it was important to have the show out there and building momentum before we came into New York. We felt similarly that would be important for the West End, because even though we have had success in New York and had success in Toronto, there's no guarantee of success in London. And again, it's a tricky title. It's not a big blockbuster, so we felt like we needed to build some time in.
Junkyard Dog Productions sought out producing partners early on. John Brandt of Smith & Brandt Theatricals describes why he and his producing partner, Joe Smith, expressed their interest and also their desire to get it to Europe.
Well, what was really interesting is me and Joe, obviously there was a strategic element to why we wanted to be involved, and we wanted to be involved as at higher level as we possibly could. We opened officially opened in March of 2017. And at that time, there was a lot of stuff opening on Broadway that involved UK people. So I think Charlie was opening, Groundhog Day was opening. So there were a lot of around that, in that Tony Award period. So there were a load of UK people over there. And me and Joe didn't really think a lot about it. And then we started getting emails. We started getting emails from people like Playful, from other marketing agencies, from marketing agencies, from PR agencies, all just saying, oh my God, I saw Come From Away yesterday and I saw that you guys were involved. And there was an immediate outpouring of love and respect for this show. So actually, we didn't really have one eye on the West End until it opened, and there was this kind of groundswell that we just kind of rolled with.
But why did the producers decide to go to Dublin and not straight into the West End?
We wanted it to be authentic. We wanted there to be a reason. And we kind of honed into either something in Glasgow in Scotland or something in Dublin, because so much of the Celtic music, the language, but a lot of the people who arrived in Gander came from the port of Dublin or the port of Glasgow. So I can't remember how the Abbey came about, but we got in contact with the guys, and Neil spearheaded it really, and we went over and saw them. They had quite a similar showing at that time, which was a true story based around the Troubles in Ireland, but very early stages, but was at the Muso and everyone was on stage. And we saw this production, and I remember turning to Joe about halfway through and saying, they'd love it here. It would really work here. Then we worked very hard to make that happen.
It also gave us the opportunity to bring some influential folks in, whether it was press for lead articles or group sales ticketing people, to give us a little bit of lead time on that as well. There was also another very practical reason, which was not why we initially, the reasons that we just outlined are the reasons why we wanted to go somewhere before London and why we were happily settled with our partners at the Abbey in Dublin. But the other practical thing that came about was that we had our entire creative team available to mount the show in Dublin, and given the schedule with the Phoenix Theatre, we would not have had them available to us had we gone directly into rehearsal to open at the Phoenix because of their schedules and working on other projects. So it also gave us an opportunity to fully rehearse the show with our original creative team when they were available. It's one of those things that actually, you know, we do this, you've been in this business long enough, you know when the gods are smiling on you and you know when the gods are not.
With the theater gods smiling on Come From Away, a West End transfer plan was put into action. But first, they needed to tweak a few things in the script for a European audience. The creative team discussed these changes.
There's a couple of script elements that have changed bringing it across the ocean. We found out very quickly in the audition process that no one had any idea who Tom Brokaw was. And there was this story about the reporter character was phoned by Tom Brokaw, who was doing a documentary about it. And we very quickly had to figure out an alternative. But fortunately, Oprah Winfrey also phoned that reporter in Gander and didn't make a documentary, but did phone and left a message on the answering machine, which Brian Mosher and Newfield Land will happily play you because he has kept it.
Just phone him. Get him on Facebook.
For 17 years.
I'll do it. All the scenes on the tube.
So we were, the discussion was like in the US environment, the word tube means television.
Yeah.
And over here, we were concerned that the word tube would seem like the underground. But actually, when we tried to change it, the fix was worse. So it was one of those things where the fix didn't read any better. And I think it is actually clear in concept. It's so clear that they're talking about television.
And they're Americans talking about it. Canadians talking about it.
It could have been Americans. And somebody's holding a remote control staring at something that looks like a TV. So
there you go.
Flickering light on.
we figured it did help it a little bit.
We changed, Wish Kids didn't quite work in a UK environment, so we made it Make a Wish Kids. Mobile phones was much clearer than cell phone over here, so we changed a couple little things just for clarity.
It's something that we thought we would need to. What I found interesting in rehearsal was that they were like, "Oh no, we get it. We experience this knowing where these people are from." That seems to be something that we're used to doing.
Yeah,
here maybe more than American audiences.
Mm. Now the producers needed to start building a company, but it wasn't a straightforward casting. There were a few considerations that had to be noted.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly talked about before we cast the UK production, and like what are the strengths of the actors we cast both in London and in Dublin, different kinds of actors have played each of these roles. Like if you put all the, we have four companies up and running as of now, and if you put the people next to each other, a lot of times they don't look like each other, but there is something sort of about their home base personality that they share in common. And often there's a couple of very specific things, like to tell the story of the bus where a gander bus driver is driving a bus full of people from Africa who he shares no language with. You know, like there's a certain kind of ethnicity you need to tell that story. Hannah has been on sort of all kinds of different people have played her. The actual Hannah is an amazing kind of Irish-American woman from Long Island. You know, it's really through the audition process, we ask people to do all kinds of different dialects and move and act and sing and improvise. So by the time we're done, you really have a sense of who that person is and you fall in love with them in the audition process.
The dialect also was sort of interesting because Joel Goldie's our dialect coach had to totally take it from a different perspective of finding it not from an American accent or a Canadian accent, but finding it from a UK accent. So I think that process was different.
I think the dialect was actually more challenging for the UK actors, the Gander dialect, because it's so close to Irish. And it's not Irish, but it shares a lot of sounds and a lot of vowels with it. So I do think that this cast immediately, their bodies and mouths tried to take them to Ireland. And getting it specifically Newfoundland enough was challenging for them in a way that a North American, like, you know, ear hears Canadian, like far, like the kind of Canadian sounds much more easily.
Oh, they complained about it. The cast said to me, like, what did you do to us? Like, dumped us in Dublin, told us, don't talk like that.
Particularly the Irish actors. That it was fiendishly difficult to get a dialect that's not that different from what you grew up with, but is actually different. Rachel and David both, I think, took them a couple of weeks to wrap their minds around it.
With the cast assembled, the producers knew what a pre-West End run would do for the company.
We did the same thing in Toronto. We went to Winnipeg before the actual sit-down production in Toronto opened. Part of it has to do with the cast as well. I mean, it is hard work what those people have to do and getting that show in their bones and being able to do it.
Yeah.
All the movement, all the things that they have to do over the course of that 100 minutes. And it's just a way of helping that cast become basically a unified whole.
A true ensemble.
Yeah, a true ensemble. And so by the time they all got to Toronto from Winnipeg or from to London from Dublin, they were in magnificent shape. They felt very confident about what they were doing and they were having a blast.
The reason for going to Dublin was because that had worked so well that it had crisscrossed across America and also done these concerts in Gander before it came to Broadway. 200,000 people had seen it. And I think that word of mouth is really helpful. But also, this show is such a collaborative ensemble piece. You need to, it's important to take the cast away so that they can bond, so that they can discover these characters in a very tight choreographed framework. They can discover these characters and they can bond as an ensemble because that's so important to what we see on the stage.
Cast members agreed and took the opportunity to get to know each other better.
Dublin was a good way for us to bond as well because we were away from home. We did have the house parties and we did, you know,
we had each other and that was
we went around Dublin and did a lot of sightseeing. And it was a good way to bond and all get to know each other. As well, all of us. It was a special time, Dublin. It's good. I loved it.
Yeah, beautiful.
Not every show that transfers across the Atlantic is well received on the other side. Were the producers concerned about how the show would land in its pre-West End tryout in Dublin?
In many ways, it is as much about getting the company and giving them the opportunity to play that show for a few weeks and get it in their bodies before then opening cold, rather than opening cold in a big city.
I always thought they'd get it in Dublin. I just did. I thought because of the music and ultimately you know, at the end of the show, when the band come out and play, I always felt like that audience were going to enjoy that. But also, I think there's a lot of similarities, I think, between the people of Gander, the people of Ireland, very open people, very proud people, very patriotic people. But you never know how they're going to respond to the actual story. So I thought they would always get into that, but you're never quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we didn't know. I mean, I think we were all slightly nervous about it. The good news is there had been a lot of folks who had been over to see it in New York from London and so forth who had seen it, who were just felt that it would play really, really well in London. But again, until you get there, you don't know. And Dublin, we had no idea what that was going to be like.
The cast also had concerns, with many of them actually having played the Abbey Theatre in Dublin previously in their careers.
I must say, I found that there was a worry for me that they might find it. They might almost be not insulted by it, but a bit like, hold on a second, what are you
Irish
doing?
Irish jiggy jiggy music.
You know, is this diddly eye music and funny Irish accents? That
are you taking the piss out a little bit?
Yeah. So that was my only worry about it. They were like, oh no.
So what was it like opening night in Ireland? Were the company's fears unfounded?
They went mental. I think the wonderful thing about Irish audiences is I've been very lucky to work there a lot, obviously, because it's home. And the wonderful thing about Irish audiences is that if they love it, they really love it.
And they'll show you.
And they will show you. And it's Dublin is all word of mouth. If they don't like something, no one goes. I've been in those shows. They don't like it, no one goes.
Just
so,
you.
Yeah, and then. Yeah. So, hello, hi, Mum.
The Dubliners, they really did enjoy it because it's you know, it's got that Celtic feel. Yeah. They can relate to it. Yeah. And I don't know if they spoke to you, but some of the guys, when you come out of stage, thought it's like the music is incredible.
Yeah,
it
really the is. Music was always really mentioned, is. Especially over there.
Yeah.
But that was the first, that first preview where they took the roof off and they stood up, and that we now call it that wall of sound.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Bashes you in the face. Yeah. And it's a small theatre,
it was
right?
only
400,
500. Such a lovely space because it was so intimate.
Yeah. Absolutely couldn't believe it. Very emotional, actually.
Yeah, I didn't want to take it. For me, I was just like, okay, that's just the first night.
Yeah, that's
never going to happen again.
Yeah.
With how many months now? 5, 7 months in?
5.
Every 6. Single performance that wall of sound comes.
The first 10, 15 minutes in Dublin, you felt and saw, we could see a lot of the audience, still can with a show, them sitting back a little bit. Mm. And then after about 15 minutes, when they know the humour, they know actually that we're not taking the piss out of anybody, this is actually what happened, and getting the comedy, they then really leaned in. And it seems to be a bit, that happens sooner here. Whereas Dublin, it felt a bit like.
I've never seen an Irish audiences like that, ever, really? In terms of just their. No. I've never seen audiences react like that at the end of a show, ever. I don't think they've ever seen it at the Abbey either, you know.
When we were in Dublin, because of the Irish American connection, the Irish Newfoundland connection, the language, the response we got, it's the same as we got here, but. And you kind of understood that. And you think, yeah, but that's understandable because of the. And because the Irish music. So. Yeah. And I was very cynical. I thought, when we get here, you know, we've been. With a false sense of security. Well, very. Because, you know, I've been on the block a few times. And so, you know, I thought, oh, no, London was. Oh, no, no. But boy, was I wrong. The response has been exactly the same.
Although, I think the opening night, our first preview was our kind of opening night, but that reaction of the audience, the gut thing that
in
now
London.
Happens.
Yeah.
No, in Dublin.
In Dublin
because it happened in Dublin. There were 500 people at the Abbey, and they all seemed to have an electric shock from the seat. And we had not experienced that before.
No.
It was a leap to their feet and a real, it was not a. Oh, that's quite a nice play. We must have listened to the explosion. I tell you one thing that one of our producers said. The amount of men she saw crying in Dublin, she said, was unprecedented.
Right.
Just
from the
openly sobbing. Mm. More than in New York and in
it
the
It also brought a whole new
said.
Audience into the Abbey that had never been there before. Oh, like we spoke to people all the time, because the nice thing about the Abbey was that the bar was open. You'd kind of just walk through the bar afterwards or go have a drink afterwards. So you'd meet the audience quite regularly.
Mm.
And so many people went, I've never been in the Abbey before, and this is just, I've never been anything like this before.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'm coming back, maybe not to see this show, but, it was just wonderful because they couldn't get a ticket. So, but yeah, it was wonderful for that. It opened up a whole new audience for the Abbey, which is wonderful.
It was such a perfect theatre, wasn't it? In lots of respects, to start it, because of that, because we walked through the bar at the end of the show, we spoke to people. And it's amazing on this show how many people at the end of it want to tell you stories. And either people who were directly involved, people who weren't, people, like people want to share. Which is such a nice thing to bring out to people. And also, obviously, because it's such an intimate house in Dublin as well.
In fact, the show was so successful that members of the cast couldn't even get tickets for their families flying in just to see the show.
But it was phenomenal. From day one, we were like...
I couldn't get my family to
see Wembley Arena.
The second time
neither did mine. I had to literally beg, borrow, and steal tickets because my family were all like, we'll go and see.
I know,
fine.
Right, we'll get tickets
to the Abbey, be grand, don't worry about it.
No,
and
so
of course,
nice.
You
so
know,
nice.
Last week they're going, can we see your show? I went, no, you can't.
It's so nice.
No tickets.
Yeah. I remember asking our company manager, like 2 or 3
in
weeks,
the tech room?
Yeah, can I get tickets for January? And he was like, no.
No.
I was like, No, January.
Next year.
Like, my friend sat on, no word of a lie, my friend sat on the usher seats at the back. They flew from London and him and his mum sat on usher seats at the back.
Come From Away transferred to the Phoenix Theatre in London's West End and opened to numerous 5-star reviews. And has there been a difference in audience reaction now that they're at the Phoenix?
The first preview was the most bizarre experience. Everyone went, it was crazy.
Yeah. When we said, welcome to the Rock, boom. And we were a bit like, oh my God, it's like being in a wind tunnel.
Yeah.
Just screamed and we couldn't get
it. Ever heard that noise in a theatre before.
Yeah, it was insane.
For the end of musical.
And that's
the
end of opening, that was the end of the opening
number.
And it,
in our first preview here.
Clive being like, okay.
Clive had to literally, because he speaks straight after the number, he had to kind of just like, guys, seriously, we've got a whole show to get through, relax.
He had to calm down.
Literally had to put his hands out and say, you know, anyway, show.
Safe to say that the European premiere and its subsequent trip across the Irish Sea was a complete success. But it turns out that one of the producers wasn't too worried about how well Come From Away would be received.
You know, I think one of the things that we have learned with this show is that the idea of kindness, humanity and kindness is a universal theme, the response to that, but also the fact that the events of 9/11 affected everybody on this globe in a way. And everyone has a memory of that day and nobody owns it, you know, everybody's got it. And even young people who were not alive at that time, we find, respond to the show because it helps them understand the world they live in. So we were not sure, of course we're trepidatious, but you know, that first audience in Dublin when they leapt to their feet and gave that kind of response. And it's funny because the cast too, they're like, you know, we don't know what this is going to do. We have no idea.
Well, because a lot of them
had they hadn't ever actually seen the show. So it was a discovery for them too. But it was, of course, it was thrilling for us to see that the response is universal. And the same thing happened in Melbourne this summer. It just reinforces the idea of a universal story, I think, of human kindness.
So there you have it, the story of the little musical that grew from a Canadian workshop performance to having its European premiere at the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, Ireland, before hopping over to the beautiful Phoenix Theatre in London's West End, where it opened to 5-star reviews on its way to picking up 4 Olivier Awards, including Best New Musical. Join us for the next episode, when we give you a front row seat to Come From Away's launch party at the Canadian Embassy in London, and find out why the team behind the show thought it was so important to have the European journey announced there.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUFS has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.